Welcome to Definitely a Board Game Podcast, a podcast definitely about board games, except when they're not. I am your host, A.A. Ron Milich, and I'm here with the Paul Felix Lazarfeld of board games, Royce Cowerly. Royce, say hi to everybody.
Who the heck is Paul Felix Lagerfeld?
You don't know who Paul Felix Lazarfeld is?
Nobody knows who Paul Felix Lagerfeld is.
Lagerfeld? You may have a point. I'll tell you, the Paul Felix Lazarsfeld of board games is not really a board game guy.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's you. This is the founder of the Modern Research Survey.
Okay.
And you know, now do you know why I picked him?
I get it. No, absolutely. It's very clever way of introducing the fact that our survey is still ongoing and you can win $50. But what is the modern survey?
Research survey. Apparently it only started in the 30s. People like collecting data and using it to compare things and results and everything. Yeah. He's the father, he's the guy. I didn't do much research into his character, so hopefully he was not some hateful, horrible person.
I'm comparing just about to say, you picked a German guy collecting research data in the 30s. Oh. I hope you didn't do something bad here.
Yeah, once again, off to a rocky start. I mean, how bad could he be if he's the guy who started surveys?
Absolutely. Yeah. Nothing bad has ever happened in a survey.
Yeah. And folks, if you're listening and you know that he was a horrible person, just keep it to yourself. Episode 38. And as Royce mentioned, we have a survey going on right now. It's your chance to tell us what we're doing right or wrong on our podcast. You can basically direct us where you want us to be, where you want us to go, what you want us to do. And the second you answer that survey, you're going to be entered into a draw for a $50 gift card to your favorite board game store, which Royce will happily give you.
Yeah. In fact, you might even say it's feedback.
Oh, my God.
It's your opportunity to give us feedback.
Yeah. Just don't sing it to us. And Royce, yeah. I wanted to ask, when are we going to let people know who won?
I think we decided we were going to do that on episode 40.
That would be a big celebration. That's a good way to do it. I like it.
So you guys have a few weeks to answer the survey until we hit the limit for the number of questions we can get anyway.
Seven, eight. We went with a free service, didn't we?
We did, but it's a little more than that. Okay. So there are actually two surveys. Each one is 10 questions long, so they're both very short.
Yeah.
They will take very little time for you guys to fill them out, but highly recommend you get in there, do that quick, win the prize, can't hurt, and it helps us a lot. It really does.
Spoiler alert, question 20. That may take you time to really get the right answer there. I had a hard time with that one.
I'm not entirely sure there are any wrong answers on that one.
We do have feedback. Do you want to give us another? Since we missed the feedback song last week, you've already done one. Give us a second one to catch up.
Feedback.
The maestro, ladies and gentlemen.
I kind of feel like that was one of my better ones.
Pianissimo, very quiet.
Yep.
I said that wrong too.
Yep,
pianissimo. A little bit of subtleness. There's no extra M in there. Pianissimo is what I meant to say. I enjoyed it. It was quiet. It was nice. It was. It had heart.
All my songs have heart.
Do you want to know what the feedback is and who it's from?
Tell me about the feedback.
Well, do you want, first of all, guess who gave us feedback?
I'm going to go with brother-in-law Mike.
Just a moment there for his music. You're right. It is my brother-in-law, Mike. Yes. He had a couple pieces of feedback.
Excellent.
One for you, one for me. He basically said, since I'm giving you a nickname every episode, like Paul Felix Lazarsfeld, he decided to call me the jabroni of board games, which is not very nice, but it's true. I usually lose, so he's not actually wrong.
Not totally inaccurate.
Yeah. But he also said that they have gotten around to playing Mini Express and they liked it.
Excellent. I'm so glad.
And apparently my nephew Calvin has played it in solo mode.
Really? Wow.
So I think they really liked it.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah.
So that's it. That's all he said, but it's not bad. I know you were wondering about it, and I guess he wanted you to know that he does.
No, I was, absolutely. Yeah. That's neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoy Mini Express, another Taiwanese game. If you want to know more about Taiwanese games, our last episode, we had Smooks Chen on, if you missed it. Fascinating interview. He talked about importing and publishing games out of Taiwan. He talked about Taiwanese food. He talked about traveling to various conventions to promote Taiwanese games. Really interesting guy, really interesting thing. And yeah, Mini Express, Taiwanese game from Madeus Industries.
He was an awesome guest. And of course, you know what that means, what time of the show it is now.
Yep.
I can tell by your reaction.
All I'm going to say.
You're thrilled. It is time for Aaron's awful joke of the day. And as always, I am I'm being current. I'm being hip. I got my finger on the pulse.
Yeah, your Lazarfield quote was right on the pulse.
That's me, Mr. Finger on the Pulse. This joke is about surveys.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Have you heard about the most recent survey about dwarves?
Was it a little short?
No. They found out that 6 out of 7 dwarves aren't happy.
Crap, I laughed.
Yay! And it wasn't an animal joke.
Sometimes I try not to laugh, but actually that was pretty good.
So we should maybe change the name. Aaron's not so awful joke of the day. Can we do that?
No.
We're not there yet. All right.
No, just because I laughed doesn't mean it ain't bad.
All right, let's go over to quick thoughts. Okie dokie. Quick thoughts. You know, calling this quick thoughts is like calling my joke awful. It's not quite accurate. Royce just raised his eyebrow and like, yeah, right, Aaron. So, as always, we have three games, 2 for Royce, 1 for me, like we usually do. And the first one is Rift Force, Carlo Bordolini, One More Time Games. I've heard of this name, 2021. What's going on with Rift Force?
All right, so Rift Force. It's an interesting game. So first of all, it was a Kickstarter funded back in 2020, October, I think. So it actually fulfilled very quickly. They went from funding to fulfillment very quickly during COVID with all the issues going on. The backers started getting it in July, I believe. And now it's going to hit retail in October.
Oh, okay.
So when I saw this game, I thought, so it's a 2-player game.
Oh.
Each player has 4 guilds, which each have special powers. And then you have your little monsters that go out and fight for you to try to get 5 different areas. And I thought it was going to be sort of like Magic the Gathering with a little bit fewer variation in the card. But I was very surprised when I ended up playing it. So what happens is you start by drafting your 4 guilds. And each guild leader represents one of the 10 elements that are available. So you discard one right away, you draft 4, and then you discard a second one. So you're going to have a different grouping of guilds every single time you play. Each guild gives you 1 special ability that applies to all of the elemental creatures for that guild.
Okay.
And so there's really just 3 actions. You put down new elemental creatures, you activate those elemental creatures, or you draw cards and score if you control various regions. And the first person to get to 12 wins. What surprised me about this game is it actually feels like a classic Reiner Knizia game.
You'll have to explain what that means. Like,
something like Lost Cities or Battle Line or one of these games. I think we played Lost Cities together. I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
Where you're playing cards on either side of a row of cards in order to get numbers up. You have to start with -20 points and you move up.
Nope, but I have heard of Lost Cities, but yeah, I haven't played it.
So Lost Cities Battleline, these are hugely popular. Reiner Knizia is one of the most prolific designers in game history. And not all of his games are great, but he has some classics that are just fantastic. And that's what this feels like. It feels like a classic Knizia. You're playing cards down. You're trying to decide which action to take, when to take that redraw action and maybe score a couple points is essential to the strategy of the game. But it still has that modern twist with the player powers. Since you have four player powers, and all the player powers basically do the same kinds of things, but they do it in different ways. They attack the enemy elementals. They might heal their own elementals. They move around. And if they move, they may end up attacking other elementals. It just does all sorts of different things in different ways. So that combination, that first choice on how, which guilds to take is really, really interesting. And then the tug of war at the actual battle sites is really amazing too. It isn't a combat game as such. It feels more like a classic Euro struggle area control, but works so well. And the combos work so well. If I had any complaints about it, it would be that the rule book has a few things that are not really well spelled out. Like it talks about first elemental, but it doesn't really say what the first elemental is.
Right.
It's not hard. You get it. You can figure it out. After one play, we were perfectly understanding it. The other thing is, if you just play it once, the starting powers can be a bit overwhelming.
Right.
Because you have four completely different starting powers and you're choosing out of 10, and it's a little bit, just there's a lot of them. So that initial starting powers, but once you played again, it just makes sense. You start to see how the different powers interact with each other. You start to see all the really cool combos. I really enjoy this game. And what really surprised me, Grace really enjoyed this game. Usually doesn't like combat-based games. So that tells you that there's something going on here beyond just a combat game. Don't think of it as a magic clone. It's not. It's a completely different, just a really neat game, something I haven't seen before. It's really cool. Really enjoyed it.
So it's a two-player game. Would you say it's light, medium, or heavy based on what you've...
The rules are light.
Yeah.
The strategy combinations, though, are medium, I would say. Yeah, because working out all those elementals really does give you some depth and some choices. But the rules, like I said, I just gave you all the rules, really.
Right.
There really are only three things you do on a turn. And if you do one of those three things, and that's the end of the turn. So it's very rules light, and play complexity is medium. Really nice.
So now, pardon my ignorance.
Yep.
You explained the actual game and details, but you didn't actually say what the overarching theme is. Is it a space game? Is it a forest game? Is it a... Where's the location of this thing happening?
That's an excellent question. I skipped over that a little bit, to be honest with you. So my understanding is these rifts have opened up. Mm-hmm. And all of this energy is pouring out of these rifts. And each guild represents a specific kind of energy. So there's lightning, sun, earth, air, water. So you're picking four of these guilds that are all based on various elements. And then because you pick that guild, you will be controlling all of the elemental creatures from that guild.
So... You said it comes out in October.
Yep.
You know what else is in October?
Let me guess. My birthday.
My birthday. Your birthday.
Oh, your birthday. Yeah. Your birthday. Right. It's your birthday.
So let me know if I should be putting this one on my birthday list. If you think I'd like,
I'll keep that in mind. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of my birthday, I found this game. And I've already talked about it a few times, and I'm going to keep bragging about it until we no longer talk about it. I found a copy of Mariposas for $8. So that day, it was my birthday in the middle of July, even though my birthday is in October. $8, Royce. I'm just going to keep sticking that to you. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Now, Mariposas, of course, is the follow-up game to Wingspan from Elizabeth Hargrave. AEG Games 2020. We played it once, my wife and I, in a two-player way. And we really liked it a lot. Both of us really liked it. and we liked it more than Wingspan, which I know I've mentioned as well. I mean, the overall game is actually relatively simple, even though we totally missed one of the one of the simple things. Number one, migrate your butterflies across the continent. Number two, collect flowers and breed to score points. Number three, return home. Well, we were so invested in getting across the continent, we forgot to return home. But it didn't it didn't actually affect the outcome of the game. It's a point scoring game. What I loved about this game is our city is on there, Toronto. Yeah, right on the actual board. That was pretty awesome. It's all about the, you know, the butterflies migrating south for the winter, and then of course returning home.
And you know, this is why other Canadians think that Toronto only cares about Toronto, right?
Well, we do.
We put Toronto on the board, and all of a sudden,
we're finally being recognized. We act like we're the center of the universe here in Toronto, but we know that it's pretty rare we're included outside of Toronto. So it was nice to see that. I gotta be honest. It's been a while since I've played it. I know that I really liked it, but I don't honestly remember all the details. I just remember it's all about, again, moving your butterflies and collecting your flowers to basically reproduce score points. And then, again, return home if you're much better at the game than we are. We missed that part. But really, really liked it. Works well as a two-player game. On the box, it says 2 to 5 players, 45 minutes to 75 minutes. And I would say that's about right. It took us about 45 minutes before the game was over. Lots of components, lots of parts, but very beautiful looking. Definitely not a game I would ever play or recommend to my sister-in-law because she's terrified of butterflies. But other than that, yeah, she is. I don't know why. Okay. I thought it was just moths. Yeah. Apparently it's the whole, yeah, the whole umbrella.
What's the Simpsons line? Nobody ever suspects the butterfly.
I guess so. But yeah, totally recommend it. Again, it was one of those games I kept picking up, putting down because I honestly didn't love Wingspan. I understood why everyone did. And I've played it twice and it's going to need a lot more plays. I felt Mariposas was easier to get into, easier to understand, more enjoyable, and just as beautiful as Wingspan. So,
excellent.
Highly recommend. And
it was $8. Yeah.
I wasn't going to say that, but I appreciate you reminding everyone that I paid $8 for this full already punched. That was the big thing. Imagine how long it would have taken to punch all these pieces. Anyway, enough about me and my $8.
Well, I was going to say, again, every time I go to the thrift store, all I ever see are the Zeniths. But yeah. Longtime listener Beers actually was, he said that he has quite a few copies of Zenith and really loves it. So I don't want to upset him.
The one game we always see there is Taboo. I always feel bad for Taboo. Anyway, we're not talking about Taboo. We're talking about Llama Land. Phil Walker Harding, Lookout Games, 2021. What's going on with... Now, this is not the same llama game you mentioned a little while ago. This is a different llama
game. No, that was Sabotage at Lucky Llama Land.
Right. This is just Llama Land.
Llama Land.
Got it. What's going on with Llama Land?
Llamas are big in board games right now. Llamas are the thing in board games right now.
Of course they are. Why wouldn't they be?
So I'm walking through Meeple Mart, and I'm looking around, and I went in actually just to get the tiny little pad expansion for Fleet Waters.
Yeah.
Fleet the Dice Game. And I saw this and I thought, okay, I have to buy it. It had a llama on it. Really, largely bought it because it had a llama on
it.
I mean, yeah, it's Phil Walker Harding. He's got a great reputation. His games usually are pretty good. It's Lookout Games. I really enjoy Lookout Games, but come on, it had a llama on it.
Yeah.
All right, so what is this? Well, it's a polyomino game. And yes, I know I've said I have enough polyomino games and I really don't want any more polyomino games and I'm not going to buy any more polyomino games. But, well, it's got a llama on it. But it actually does play very differently than other polyomino games.
Okay.
Every other polyomino game I have, I think, the polyominoes are always played onto a shape.
Right.
It's a rectangle. You're trying to fill up the rectangle or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. New York Zoo made it a little bit weird, but it's still, you're filling up a shape. This one has no shape.
Oh, okay.
You're just playing the polyominoes down in front of you. So you're recreating like the Incan highlands, and you're trying to raise your llamas and explore the land. And so basically on your turn, you've got a couple options, but the main two options are either to play down a polyomino shape to expand your hill. Mm-hmm. So basically you play it flat outside to make your base bigger. Or you play it on top of polyominoes you've already played to create the hills. So there's this three-dimensional polyomino thing. And you can't put a polyomino on top of a same shape. Like, you can't just have all of the same shapes building up on each other. It has to go across at least two different polyominoes. Yeah. It can't have any empty space underneath it. So you have to sort of plan how you're going to build. But in addition to that, building out gives you more room to build. Building up, though, is how you get resources, because anything you cover will give you a resource. So if you cover corn, you get corn. If you cover cacao, you get cacao, etc. So when you cover something, you get those resources. And then you spend those resources to do things like feed llamas. Yep, you get to feed the llamas. Mm-hmm. Whenever you feed the llama, you get a llama meeple, and you put it on your little hill. So you got a nice little polyomino hill with your little meeple sitting on top. And you get to do various different goals that will give you bonus points at the end as well.
Okay.
So you get points from feeding the llamas, you get points from collecting goods, you get points from fulfilling these goals, and at the end, whoever has the most goals wins. Actually, it's a really fun little tile placement, polyomino placement, 3D building Euro game. It's a lot of fun. I really quite enjoyed it. It's not long. It took us maybe 15, 20 minutes of play. So it's a pretty quick game. It's a filler length, but it's a lot of fun. It looks beautiful, and it's got llamas, and everybody loves llamas.
You mentioned that. Yeah. I was going to say something. Yes. You've already scared me with the building up thing. You know how well I do at those kind of games. And when you said you can't match tiles, then yeah.
But on this one, it's not such a big deal because it doesn't really matter where you put it as long as there's no space underneath.
Okay.
So it's not like you have to say, okay, if I put this here, I'll never be able to put something on top of it or whatever. It's not that difficult. But
I could probably handle it.
Yeah. And you get three little, I guess, joker tiles that are just one by one squares that you can just put onto your board at any time. So if you do create a space where you really need something to fit in that space, you can just use one of your joker tiles for free.
Are these joker llamas?
No. They're just, you know, ground.
Just ground. All right. So Rift Force, two thumbs up for a two-player game. Mariposas, definitely two thumbs up for however many you're going to have. Works great as a two-player game. And Llama Land, did you play this as two players?
I only played it two players, but I don't think it would make any real difference number of players. I think it'll be just as good with more players.
And you recommend this one. Awesome. I went to Meeple Mart recently too, and oh my God, I don't know how you find anything in there. It was so overwhelming. So overwhelming. I was like, yeah, I'm going to buy something. I'm like, I just went out of there saying, there's no. There's too many choices. I just walked out. But I didn't even see Llama Land there, which is interesting.
It might be sold out. Oh, I don't know. It's brand new, so yeah.
Awesome. All right, let's go over to the news. All right. My favorite section, the news. I see a couple things here I don't know anything about, so I'm sure you'll fill me in. IDW Games has shut its doors. That doesn't sound good.
No, so both of these news are, again, industry is going through this shakeup. Everything's sort of merging, expanding, closing, opening. It's just a weird time in the industry. And unfortunately, this is a little bit of bad news. It's also a tiny bit of Schadenfreude, but I'll get past that in a second.
All right.
So IDW Games. IDW Games is a subdivision of IDW Publishing. IDW Publishing is primarily a comic book publishing company. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of licensed comic books, so Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, Doctor Who, Star Trek, all these sorts of things. Wow. So they have a lot of comic books. They're a very fairly big comic book publishing company. And the game company started out pretty well. They did a couple of clunkers, not so great games. They did, for instance, they did the Chew game based off of one of their comics. not a great game, to be honest with you. They did the Atari games. Hmm. You played a few of those. You said they weren't good.
Yes, the Centipede was awful. Yeah.
But they did do some excellent games as well. One of the first games they did that was really a good game was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shadows Out of the Past game.
Okay.
This is a one versus many miniature-based combat mission game. Really good. This is where my Schadenfreude comes in a little bit. When I backed that Kickstarter, they were talking about the Cityfall expansion.
Okay.
So it wasn't offered during the Kickstarter, but they were already talking about it. They were already promising what they were going to do. And a little while later, they do hire Richard Lanius. He's the director to do the Cityfall expansion. It didn't work out. There was a lot of problems. And they ended up instead putting out Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Change is Constant, which is kind of a second edition of Shadows of the Past.
Okay.
And it's better. I know it is, but I still wouldn't back it because I was still annoyed with them because they didn't put out the expansion they promised when they did the original Kickstarter, and I felt like they were kind of leading us in a little bit. All right, no problem. They also did a Batman Gotham Under Siege game that was good, that had good reviews, and they did a Batman animated series game that was actually going to be compatible with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Changes Constant game. That one hasn't been fulfilled yet, but they seem to still be working on it, and they're promising they will finish that. Where all this is going is they just released their Q2 fiscal report. Mm-hmm. And there's one little line in the Q2 fiscal report that basically says that they have exited from the tabletop game business.
Oh.
And it's the reason they mentioned it was because they're writing off a lot of the expenses that they had initially post-credited for their tabletop game businesses and letting their staff go from the tabletop game business. So this is a little bit sad. It's a little bit weird. It's going to be interesting. They have this Batman animated series game, which did very well on Kickstarter, which is in theory in production now. Hopefully it'll still be fulfilled. They were going to do a Metal Gear Solid game that was hugely hyped. There was a lot of excitement over that one, and it's been canceled. So yeah, IDW Games is gone, or at least will be gone very, very shortly, and we'll all be watching pretty carefully to see what happens with the games they're currently producing to see if they finish them.
So what do you predict? Do you predict they're just done, or they will actually finish the ones they've started?
I think they'll finish the Batman the Animated Series game. I think that I don't think IDW wants the negative press of just abandoning it. I think they'll finish that and that's it. Then it'll be done.
All right. And then it says here, GameCenter has acquired Fantasy Flight Games Center.
Yes. Yeah.
What does that mean?
Remember we talked about Sophia Gravel and Z-Man Games?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about how it was all this big secular thing.
Yeah, she sold the company twice.
Let me tell you another story.
Oh, boy.
All right. So let's talk about Fantasy Flight Games.
Okay.
At one time, Fantasy Flight Games was it. They were easily the biggest publisher in North America. They were one of the biggest in the world. They were started by a gentleman by the name of Christian T. Peterson.
Okay.
And in 2014, Fantasy Flight Games, when it was sort of at its peak, merged with Asmodee Games.
Okay.
And I say merged instead of bought out because it was more like Asmodee Games acquired Fantasy Flight as a North American arm. So rather than just buying it out, they used it to create Asmodee North America.
Okay.
So part of Fantasy Flight at that time was they had their Fantasy Flight Game Center, which was a very large retail space combined with play area, combined with warehouse, a whole just a massive play space and retail store. Okay. You're with me so far?
With you so far.
Asmodee has purchased Fantasy Flight. They merged with Fantasy Flight. They have that. Shortly after, I think this was 2018, Christian T. Peterson leaves Fantasy Flight. So he was still running the North America division for Asmodee. He was part of Asmodee, very big with Asmodee. He left and he said, that's it. I've had enough of this. I'm going to go out on my own. And that was it. He was gone. All right. So now we get to 2021. In April, Fantasy Flight announces they're selling their Fantasy Flight retail center, the Game Center.
Hmm.
And they're selling it to a business called Game Center with a Z. With a Z.
Yeah.
Game Center.
Yeah.
All right. So now the Fantasy Flight Game Center has been renamed. It's now Game Center. Why am I telling you all this?
Yeah, why?
Well, turns out Game Center is owned by Strange Stars, LLC. Mm. And Strange Stars is an investment company owned by Christian Peterson.
Okay.
And we're back to the beginning again.
Yeah.
So yeah, as Christian Peterson starts Fantasy Flight, emerges with Asmodee, makes a pile of money, leaves Asmodee, buys back the Fantasy Flight retail center, and who knows what's going to happen next. I just love seeing these stories.
That's so weird. Why does this keep happening like on loop? Like,
I just don't think there are that many big players in the industry. And so they're constantly going to be interacting with each other.
Yeah. So you know what? That is a question that I now regret we didn't ask Smooks when he was here. And you just raised a point that this place was a retail store.
Yes.
I've noticed. I mean, Indigo carries some board games. Sunrise Records carries some board games. But the place
you're American, then you have their Barnes & Noble. You have like all of these companies that carry board games as well. Target,
FG Bradley's. Yeah. So, and then we have, but you know, in Toronto, if we're going to go get games, we're going to 401 Games, which has two locations. Meeple Mart, which has one. I don't even know where Board Game Bliss is. Is it just online or is it?
They just moved up to Richmond Hill, actually.
Okay. I wonder why, considering how much money is being made and the popularity of board games, especially with people our age and slightly younger, why there isn't an actual chain store for board games.
There are in the States. I think Gaming Goat is one. Cool Stuff Inc. is a chain store. There are. The problem is that difference between an FLGS and an LGS. A friendly local game store and a local game store. It's like anything else. When you start to have a chain, you stop getting these people that are passionate and care about the product.
Mm-hmm. Do I need to remind you of the one time I asked someone for help at 401 Games, how friendly they were to me?
No. Not everyone is perfect.
But I hear what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
It seemed like for a while Mastermind wanted to be that, but they're more into kids' toys, so they only carry younger games. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it just seems like the time is right for that. But
you might be right. Yep. This might be a good time for somebody to say, okay, I'm going to start breaching out into a real chain of gaming stores.
Because if you're like you and me, who've been doing this for a while now, you know, if you go into an Indigo or a Walmart or whatever, you know what you're, and a Bay, I think you mentioned, or some other ones, you know what you're going to get and expect. The Monopolies, the Battleships, the Hasbro. But then you know if you really want good games, you got to go to these, I guess, niche stores, specialty stores. So it just seems to me that if there was one that kind of encompassed it all, they would be successful at this point. I could be wrong.
You might be right. You might be wrong. I really don't know. Yeah.
Because, I mean, we have long winters here in Canada. Lots of inside time with the family.
Might be the newest and closest thing we have to that in Canada is actually Snakes and Lattes.
Right.
Because they have a retail store attached to the cafe, and they're now up to 5 or 6 branches.
Yeah, they might be
the closest thing we have in Canada to a game store chain.
Yeah, and they're definitely closer to having niche and non-niche. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that was interesting. It was interesting to hear that it's not, what was her name that from last time?
Sophia Gravel?
Yeah, she's not the only one that's pulling this trick in the gaming world. All right, let's head over to New to the Collection. All right, New to the Collection. This is our opportunity to brag about what we've been buying. And the first one is one of Royce's. Sounds awesome. The Grand Austria Hotel, that's Waltz, by Virginia Ojigli, Simone Luciani, a name we've heard before. Lookout Games, another new one, 2021. You've been buying it up, man, in 2021.
Well, this is actually a Kickstarter. This is an expansion for Grand Austria Hotel.
Okay.
So I backed this quite some time ago. I actually backed it through Peter, who is someone on BGG. He did a group buy, and so I went through with him on his group buy, and it finally got delivered. Grand Austria Hotel is a great game. I really should talk about it on the show at some point. I will do that. The Kickstarter expansion is a series of modules. Module Kickstarters are not one of my favorite things. That's the idea of there's like five different little expansions in the expansion box. I much prefer one bigger, well thought out expansion rather than a bunch of smaller ones that you can mix and match. Yeah. But I'm excited to try them. But to be honest, the best part of this expansion, in the original games, you had white, pink, brown, black, and white, pink, brown, black. Yeah, white, pink, brown, and black cubes. Well, now the cubes have been replaced, and now I have coffee, wine, cake, and strudel meeples.
Oh, interesting.
Little wooden strudels and little wooden cakes. And to be honest, that's like the best thing. The other thing I want to point out, and this is really, everybody needs to do this. Even though they redid the game, so the new version from the Kickstarter had different art, different icons, all that, they did put out an upgrade pack. So if you bought the first version, you could just use the upgrade pack to go to the second version. I'm talking to Russian Railroads, which is coming out on a Kickstarter soon, which is annoying me. I'm talking to another one that I just heard about the other day that's brain just blew out of my brain. But the first edition, if you have the first edition, too bad. You can't get the expansion anymore because it won't work with the original one. I love it when the company puts out an upgrade pack. I'm willing to pay for the upgrade pack. Thank you, Lookout Games. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So yeah, I'm super excited to try some of these new modules.
Good looking out, Lookout. See what I did there?
I did.
Yeah.
I'm ignoring it. But yeah.
And so you should. I wanted to mention to you, I've had several opportunities and I don't want to forget now. I did back Reapers.
Yep. Excellent.
And it's funded. And what I loved about their email was, yeah, so, okay, we're going ahead. We knew that was going to happen. It's going to be a deck of cards and a tuck box. And we don't really know what else to say. So it's coming. Thanks. And I'm like, usually you get these long-winded emails from everyone, from, you know, the other ones I've funded about all the problems and things. And, you know, they might change this, they might change that. And he's like, yeah, okay, good. Thank you. Worst email ever.
This is like one of the, this is might be some of the charm of New Mill Industries, which put out Reapers. It's just Daniel and Tony. That's
right,
it.
Right.
And they design their own games. They put out their own games. They publish them. They assemble them. They sticker the pieces for you before they send them out. It's an incredibly fast turnaround. You're going to be amazed how fast this Kickstarter is going to fulfill and you're going to get your copy.
Right.
Because, well, it's a deck of cards in the tuck box. Yeah. That's all it is. But they will do it themselves. They'll get it out to you super fast. And yeah, they're just a couple of down-to-earth normal guys doing what they love to do. It's so fantastic.
It was refreshing in a way and definitely kind of funny. But it just seemed like he actually kept repeating himself because he wanted, I guess, to put a little more body in the email. It's funny.
That means we've got at least four copies in our direct game group.
Oh, perfect. Way to overdo that. And then
next new to the collection.
Speaking of decks of cards, Power Rangers deck building game, Matt Hyra, Dan Blanchett, Renegade Studios, 2021 again. Is this an expansion or is this an actual standalone?
No, this is a standalone game.
Okay.
My favorite deck building game of all time is the DC deck building game from Cryptozoic.
Okay. I think you mentioned
fantastic that. Game. It was designed by Matt Hyra, and he was sort of the driving force behind a lot of Cryptozoic games, and especially their deck-building games. So he left Cryptozoic a year and a half ago, And this is his first big project since he left. So he joined Renegade Studios, and he's put out the Power Rangers deck building game. Okay, I like Power Rangers. I was never as huge a fan as I was with DC, for instance. But because he was so good with the DC deck building game, I followed him to this company to pick up this one. So this is all about Matt Hyra, and I'm super excited to see what the Power Rangers deck building game is like.
Cool. All right. And now I have a new to the collection.
Woo-hoo.
And you specifically said that you wanted my new to the collection to match the theme of our show today. So very soon we'll be going into our main event. And the main event is talking about designers or publishers that catch your attention when you're wandering around your local favorite game store. And so I bought this one based on the designer. And I bought it from you. I bought Ray Colt by Uwe Rosenberg, Renegade Studios 2018. I know nothing about it. I looked at it briefly online. The reviews were decent. The score was good on BGG. I'm like, well, Royce wants to get rid of it. It's Uwe. How bad can it be? And so that is my new to the collection. And if I ever open it and play it, I'll let you know what I think.
And it's not bad. I mean, if it was bad, then I wouldn't have sold it to you, because then I'd have to put up with you telling me about it. I would have sold it to somebody who doesn't talk to me so often.
Right. good plan.
So it's not a bad game. I just already have too many big box Uwe games, and this one was never going to get to the table.
Yeah, I think, like you said, that whatever that game covered was already covered with other games. So
exactly. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you think about it.
Cool. So now that we know why this game's new to the collection, what our main event is all about, I say we go over to our big main event.
All right. Welcome to the main event. It's going to be a little bit different, a main event, because I'm going to be, you know, asking Aaron questions as opposed to him usually asking me questions.
Yeah.
So let's look at some of the games we've talked about already, right? We talked about a game that I bought solely because of llamas. We talked about a game that I bought because of the designer, Matt Hyra. We talked about a game that I bought because it came out from Lookout Games and Simone Luciani. And then I remembered a comment that Aaron had made in a previous episode. And it was just a little throwaway comment, but for some reason it stuck in my head. And what Aaron said to me was, I've gotten to a point where when I was walking through the store, I was seeing names of designers and names of companies, and they started to mean something to him.
Yeah, I did.
It wasn't just this random assortment of information anymore. They actually had stories behind them. They had connections. And so it got me to wondering, you've now been heavy into this for almost 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing the show. You've gone from being a complete noob to a noob with some knowledge, which is a little more dangerous. But at this point, what designers and publishers now catch your attention? Like, so let's start with that. What designers catch your attention now when you're walking through the store?
Well, I mean, the thing is, there's so many names now that have come up over and over and over that I recognize them right away. So as soon as I see the name, I will likely grab the box and check it out. I mean, I will admit it's not always obvious their names on the box, but when it's prevalent, I do. So here's a list of names of everyone that like will literally catch my eye in the game store. Obviously Uwe Rosenberg, Elizabeth Hargrave, Antoine Bauza, Dr. Finn, Michael Kiesling, Kevin Russ, Klaus Tuber, obviously from a long time ago, Thomas Singh, Andreas Odendahl, Frank West, Jamie Stegmaier, since they were both on our show, Sebastian Pechon, for some reason that name sticks with me, Tony Boydell, who was also on our show, and today you mentioned two more that I didn't even have on my list. I'm like, oh yeah, they definitely should be there, Reiner Knizia and Phil Walker Harding.
Yep.
So those are all names that as soon as I see it, I'm like, well, I guess I should go check it out because, you know, Royce likes these games. I have games by some of these people already that I do enjoy. So I guess for me, they're kind of the cream of the crop based on what you and I know.
Right. Yeah. Are any of those names like must buys for you? As soon as you see a game with one of their names, do you immediately like I need to buy that?
No. I mean, the closest would be Uwe. But I've experienced a couple of games I don't love by him. So I will do the research. Indian Summer was one I didn't like. Second Chance. There are definitely games on there that I would still do research for. I hate saying it. I don't actually own anything by Jamie Stegmaier, but I think his games are a little bit big for my tastes. Mm-hmm. Too rich, too deep. You know what? Tony Boydell, I usually pick up everything he does.
He hasn't done very many games, so that makes it a little easier.
Yeah. We'll talk about this in the top three about, why I buy a game and why I don't buy a game. But no, there's no single designer that I would say, oh, have to buy this game. I still do the research just in case because, as I said, I don't think any of them are necessarily perfect either. I mean, and sometimes they work with other people too, right?
I think you just have better control than I do because I didn't even think about it very hard. And I've got six names that I would instantly buy the game, even though not every game by them is great, but I would buy it anyway, just because so many of them are good. I mean, anything by Stefan Feld, Uwe Rosenberg, Simone Luciani, Danielle Tassini, Vital Lacerda, Albin Viard. I would just play those instantly. I would buy those instantly. So yeah, you're better than I am.
Stefan Feld is one I definitely should have had on this list. I recognize all those names. You and I have there's two things that kind of contribute to this. One is I have limited room. You have a room dedicated to board games, so you probably still have space or ways to, maneuver, reorganize.
Yeah.
Like I said, you could always have Grace move out, throw them in the bed. But also money, where I spend my money is different. I try not to, blow everything on this hobby because I have other hobbies.
Yeah, you blow it all on vinyl instead. Yeah.
No, I did for a while. I haven't bought vinyl in a long time. But yeah, so I mean, I have more control because I am definitely in this hobby, but I'm not, like you actually just mentioned in the news that you were reading the fiscal reports of one of these companies. That's pretty deep. I'm not that deep into the board game world. So I think that's where there's a little bit of a difference about why I don't just purchase games by these designers right away.
All right. So if those are some designers. Which hits you first, designers or publishers now?
Just designers. I don't ever rely too much on publishing, no.
So you don't look at the publishers at all in determining whether a game is something you're interested in?
No, publishers. Now, I've made a list of the ones that do stick out to me. AEG. I seem to have a lot of games by AEG. Mm-hmm. Blue Orange. But I find with Blue Orange, they have a lot of good games and a lot of games I would never even look at.
Right.
Yeah. Indie. Schmidt, which is interesting.
That's Indie Cards and Games, I assume.
Pardon?
Sorry, that's Indie Cards and Games?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Schmidt is one I have a few games from, and I'm only recognizing now because I have them kind of all lumped together. Stronghold, obviously, we talked about them at length when you bought the End of the World as You Know It box from them. Come On Games probably has to be one of the best names out there. I love that name. I should have added Lookout now that I see that on here. And one that really sticks out is Prosper or Hall, because I think we mentioned that one early on, and for some reason that name sticks out. But do I necessarily run and buy games from the publishers rather? No.
Yeah. But Prosper Hall is actually a designer. It's a designer group as opposed to a publisher. Oh,
well, there you go. Yeah. That makes sense. So, yeah. So for me, if I saw an Uwe Rosenberg game or Elizabeth Hargrave game on a publisher I didn't know, it wouldn't like prevent me from buying the game. Or if I saw it on a publisher I know, I wouldn't necessarily, again, buy it right away without doing my research.
Again, when it comes to publishers, it's not quite as strong as designers. Designers I follow much more closely and I purchase more regularly. But anything from Lookout, Z-Man, Cosmos, especially their two-player line, Cranio Creations, I'm probably going to pick it up. I'm really excited. There's a new game called Golem coming out from Cranio. It looks fantastic. Yeah, Lookout is probably the weird one there. They put out a bunch of stuff I'm not interested in, but anything by any of those companies, I'm probably interested in.
Which one did you say?
Lookout Games.
Oh, okay.
they put out a lot of games, and some I'm really excited about and some I'm not excited about at all.
Right. I think, yeah, you're into board games as much as I am into music. Like the level of detail. Like there are certain artists I'll buy the albums regardless, even if I know they're terrible. Like the last two Depeche Mode albums are unlistenable. I still bought them because it's Depeche Mode. So it sounds like there might be that for you occasionally in board games as well.
How many formats did you buy the last two Depeche Mode albums in?
Only online.
Only online. Okay, you didn't buy vinyl and CD as well.
Yeah. See, again, vinyl takes up a lot of space and is very expensive. So if you're buying records you're not going to listen to, that to me is just stupid. Unless you plan on keeping it sealed and selling it 30 years down the road for some reason because it's hard to find or something maybe. But you said you don't ever buy games in that sense to keep them as an investment.
I don't. No. Yeah. No. For me, they're for playing. They're for enjoying. I don't want. Yeah. So now that you're walking through the store, you mentioned you were in Meeple Mart and it was just overwhelming still.
Yeah.
Is it worse? Is it better? Do you find it more overwhelming now when you're getting this shock of information?
Yes. It's actually more overwhelming now. Before, I'd walk into a board game store and The way they chose games hasn't changed too much. I'm drawn to the name. I'm drawn to the design. Again, I don't want to get too much into it now because we're going to talk about it in our top three. But there's so many names now and so many publishers now that I recognize that it becomes overwhelming to look at them all. Now, 401 Games has gone back to their old format. And it seems like their store on Yonge Street mainly just keeps big titles, a lot of them, but pretty big titles. I know when I went to their, I think, is it Downsview is their other location, like way up there?
I've never been to the other location. I don't know.
I went there once and it was like Meeple Mart. Everything is there in huge, huge shelves. And Meeple Mart is, I wouldn't say huge shelves, but even the way they tried to alphabetize the place, they still couldn't do properly because there's just too many games in such a small space. They have a clearance section that is also massive of damaged games. They seem to get a lot of damaged games. They had about, what was the game that they had? 6 million copies of, what's it called? Quacks of Quedlinburg that were all completely damaged, but still charging $45 for.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is. It's more overwhelming now because now there's more to look at. Before it was kind of like, oh, that sounds interesting. Check the review. And maybe we'll give it a try, buy a couple games. Now it's like, oh my God, there's like 18 games here that look really good, all by these designers. And then you leave, I leave ending up with nothing. So I think it helps. It helps in that you're narrowed down to buying a good game. As opposed to, I have bought some stinkers in the past because it looked good and it sounded good and then it wasn't. So having these names as reference, having these publishers as reference, knowing likely it's going to be a quality product, when there's that many, it becomes like harder to find the actual one or two you want to buy.
Trust. Okay.
I'm probably very different from you.
Because for me, I guess it's like going into a place where I already know everybody.
Right.
I know most of the games on the shelves and I'm not looking at the ones I already know. I'm looking for that new friend, that new person to meet. And so it's almost like, ooh, I haven't seen that before. What's that?
I think I'm at 112 games now. I've done what you suggested and put them all on Board Game Geek. Which is very helpful. And I do recommend if you have a relatively large collection. But out of those games, there's still lots I've opened and haven't played and some I haven't opened at all, right? So I'm still not even in there yet. I think for me, I listen to you a lot and I do make notes. If you suggest a game, I'm like, that sounds like I'd really be interested in that. I kind of keep notes of it. So for me, it's still more word of mouth. From this show and reviews that I look at online more than the designers and publishers selling to me from the shelf.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I just was curious. It was just such an interesting comment that you made, and I just wanted to explore it a little bit. But you're right. This does lead directly into
Our top three. All right, so top three time. Do you want to do the big top three voice before we get going?
Top three.
Oh, you're not very excited this week.
Oh, no, I'm excited. I just thought it would be really cool to see what you can do with reverb in that.
I will do my best to make that as exciting as possible, but it's usually, the source material has to be good, and then you sort of add effects later. It's not fixed, though. The boring, monotonous voice with effects later, but I'll
all right, then explain Justin Bieber to me.
Oh, ouch. All right. Doesn't like the Biebs. All right. Our top three is totally related to our main event, and I like this idea. So three things other than the publisher or designer that will make you pick up a game, and then three things that will make you say, nope, definitely not. Nope, you're right out of the game completely. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do two top threes, two mini top threes to be more accurate.
Try something new. We'll see a couple short top threes instead of one top three where we talk a lot more than we usually do.
Yeah. One positive, one negative.
Yeah. All right. So let's start with the positive.
Who's going
top
first?
Three things that will make you pick up a game. Go for it. What's your honorable mention?
So these are the ones that make you want to pick up a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honorable mention is, you're going to hate this, award winners and award nominations. I do look at those. I pay attention. You ask.
I don't hate it. And I did too at one point. I have to admit, when I was newer to the hobby, I paid a lot more attention to the award winners. I bought the spiel every year.
All right. What about you? What's your HM?
My honorable mention for things that will make me pick up a game is price. Mm-hmm. So not high price, but if a game is cheap enough, I might buy it just based on that.
Cool. Guess what my number three is?
Award winners.
Price.
Excellent.
Yeah, you're right. You mentioned this to me in a previous podcast. I didn't even recognize until you mentioned it, that price actually sort of gives you an idea of the size of the game and what you're going to get most of the time. So I'm generally looking at games in that $30 to $50 range, and I try not to go too far above, and I will go below if it's like a card game or whatever, but then I'm a little bit leery when a larger game is in the $17, $18 range. I know something might be wrong, or it's meant for kids or something. What's your number three?
My number three? Well, animals, like llamas. It's got a llama on the box or a sheep on the box. There's a good chance I'm going to pick it up and look at it. Mm. It's interesting. When I first started to buy games for Grace and I to play, specifically for Grace and I went for the cutesy games. Grace loves animals. I thought, I'm going to go with the animal games. I've learned since then, Grace does not like cutesy games, at least not games that are generally cutesy. Huh. The reason for that is she's a Eurogamer. Right. Surprise. I didn't never thought that would be the case, but it turns out she's a Eurogamer. But a Eurogame with animals, that's the sweet spot. Right. That's the moment. That's where Grace is happiest. Any game with an animal on it, I'm going to pick it up and look at it.
We'll see if Grace can resist a game about Snoopy.
No. Guarantee you, no. We had a Snoopy Monopoly.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. I would agree with that. I look at any game that has a monkey or a panda on it. I don't necessarily buy it, but I look.
And llamas.
We'll see about the llamas. My number two, size. Size is important to me. Because again, I'm more of a light to medium gamer.
Sure.
So if I'm picking up a larger game, I might be intimidated. Also size because of space issues here. It does frustrate me a bit. I know we've gone over this, that the box often is because of the way the game has been pressed and shipped, even though when you're done punching it, the box seems way too big. I get that, but it can be frustrating when a game could have been put in a smaller box to begin with. But sure. Size is important to me, for various reasons.
All right. My number two is art. Mm-hmm.
whatever's on the cover. Like a good example would be like Bruchel's 1893 or the new Vitel Lacerda game, Weather Machine. Oh, so beautiful. Ooh. That box, even if it wasn't a Vitel Lacerda game, I would be buying it based solely on that box. So yeah, art makes a huge difference. It shouldn't, but it does. But a lot of the time, surprisingly, the art that I love isn't necessarily the prettiest art.
Yeah.
I love the old European dude scowling from a cover box. And if I see a game with an old European dude scowling on it, I know that's a good game for me. And I'm going to pick it up and look at it based on that art. It doesn't have to be pretty art. It has to be appealing art for me.
That does explain a lot. Scowling Euro man looking over the...
like Hansa Teutonica or the original Kalis. Beautiful.
Wow. Well, you'll never guess what my number one is.
I'm going to go with art.
Yeah. The name and the name, but artwork especially. Yeah. I've mentioned before, I'm drawn to the prettier things, especially if it's Asian looking. I'm typically drawn to it. Yeah. I'll talk about things that turn me off in number one that's sort of related, or in the other top three that are related to that. Yeah. But yeah, and that still is when I'm in Meeple Mart, 401 Games, whatever it happens to be, the name and the artwork will draw me in first. If a name is really interesting.
You see that lovely box? It says Llama Land on it with a beautiful llama on the cover. You just got to pick it up. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen games called, because I'm a big fragrance collector, I've seen games about perfume and I'm like, right to it. And then I look at it like, oh, this looks like a terrible game. But, you know, if it's about something in my life or if it just sounds funny or something interesting, like even Hive was one that always drew me in for yep. that word is very cool. Right. So yeah. Big thing for me. All right. What's your number one?
My number one thing that will make me look at a game is the theme.
Right.
I love themes. Now you've joked about how you put Batman or Cthulhu on it and I'll buy it. And you're not totally wrong.
And llamas.
But more than that, and llamas. But more than that, anything with a science theme or a history theme, mm-hmm. Anything with a strange theme, like the cost, for instance. So we talked about that one, about asbestos farming. I purchased Gandhi, the decolonization of British India, because it's just such an interesting theme and time. And I love games that have those really neat, unique, interesting themes.
Yeah, I think theme is somewhat important, you know, especially if it ties in with the name and everything else. Anyway, it's gonna pop out. But I'm not sure a theme would, like, if I saw a theme I thought would be cool and then checked out the reviews were still not that hot, I probably wouldn't be like all over it.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. All right. So now we're gonna go the other way. We're gonna go all negative Nancy. Here are the things. Scowling man looking over his crops. Here it comes.
No, so, no, that's a good thing.
No, that's a good thing, yeah. So these are the things that say, no, we don't want that game.
Nope. And not interested at all.
Am I going first or do you want to go first now?
I can go first this time if you like.
Sure, why not? What's your honorable mention?
So my number one thing that makes me pick up a game is the theme, especially if it's an interesting theme or a different theme. The things that make me nope, just right out of a game. My honorable mention, themes. If it's a boring theme, yeah. I don't care about the game. Look, you may love fantasy games. You may love high fantasy, but if you put fantasy on it, I'm just going to nope out of it. I don't care about Gloomhaven, and a big part of that is I don't care about the theme. Right. I don't care about the new Descent that just came out. Same with space games. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some space games I really, really like. High Frontier, One Small Step. These are more about the science of space. I love that. But just, you know, space. Ships. Woo. Yay. I just get bored. I don't care about themes that are just boring and generic fantasy, boring generic space games. And I'm just not interested in picking those games up at all.
I'm with you 100%. I see a space game, I usually don't even look at it.
Yeah.
The only one that I bought because the reviews are so high was the crew. And I would still say the theme is tacked on to a decent trick-taking game.
Which is obvious from the fact that they just redid it as a deep-sea diving game.
There you go. So my honorable mention is games with tons and tons of expansions. Now, I'm going to use an example here of why I still haven't purchased this game. I loved playing Funko Pop with you when it was the Golden Girls versus the Jurassic Dinosaur and Batman and whatever it was. But to go out for me and personally buy all of those characters and all those boards and keep it all together, it's too much. Put it all in one thing and make one or two, like the Kool-Aid Man, fine. You want to add them on later? That's great. But there's like Takedo seems to have like several expansions, and Dixit has tons of different cards and stuff. And so eventually, if I see it's going to be a major investment, I'm going to be like looking at six or seven different boxes and stuff, I typically be like, nah, no. They had their chance. They could have done, you know, one good game, maybe with one expansion, and put it all in there. But if they're going to just take my money with all the expansions, I generally just avoid the temptation right off the bat.
It's so interesting because most people would say, well, if it's got lots of expansions, it has to be good.
Right.
And you're sitting there going, huh, I'm not even going to find out.
Well, I don't know. Like sometimes I got to be honest, I've only ever purchased a couple of expansions, one for Catan and I think one for, I can't even remember now, a couple for Dixit. Carcassonne, I had the Carcassonne big box. We didn't even really look at the expansions. We played the one expansion and just played with the regular game. So I don't know. For some reason, expansions to me, it just, for some reason, turns me off. I can't really explain it. Okay. I love Funko Pop, don't get me wrong, but I would never, like, I had the chance. I had the chance to buy all four Golden Girls and every other character I wanted. It would have been like $300. I'm like, no. So.
Okay.
You're number three.
My number three. I should point out, look, I'm pushing close to 1,000 games in my collection. Woo! Obviously, there are very few things that make me really nope. These are more warning signs as opposed to actual nopes.
Yellow flags, not red flags.
All yeah, right. This is, it's less likely that I will buy it, not that I won't buy it. So my number three is anything that is 3+ players.
Oh.
Because I play with Grace most of the time.
Right.
And we normally play 2 players. If it doesn't have a 2-player option, I am less likely to purchase it.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, I did not include that in my list, but that would definitely be, that should have been on my list.
Yeah.
Good call.
Thank you.
That's why you're the expert and I'm just Schmucky the host.
And now, see, Mike, that's how you come up with a nickname. Schmucky the host.
Hey, that's a sort of a compliment. I'll take that. My number three, and I don't know if this is the right wording. I may have to explain it. You can correct me. But designer crossovers. I will not play anything DC, Marvel, Star Wars, Firefly. Anytime I see it's a TV show or a movie, I'm not interested in it right away.
So the proper term is intellectual property.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can kind of understand. You go back 10 years, maybe even 5 years, anything intellectual property was a huge red flag.
Yeah.
You just stayed away from it. Gale Force 9 did a lot to turn that around. They are specializing in intellectual property games and they've done excellent games. And nowadays, I don't even worry about picking up an intellectual property game. They're not the cash grab they used to be. They're now well thought out, well designed games. Not all of them, obviously, but not all games are well thought out and well designed anyway. But I don't worry so much. I mean, obviously, if I see it on the shelf at Walmart, that's a bigger concern.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. That's where you usually see them. And I know that there's been a lot of good ones. Like even the Star Wars Monopoly we play at the cottage was a good version of Monopoly. We have Villainous, which is obviously from the movies. That seems to be okay. But in general, like if I see a hockey player on the front, you know, if I see you know, a person from a movie show or a movie or a TV show that I know. I don't know. For some reason, it just turns me off. And it has nothing to do with the game being good or bad. It's just I'm not interested. I don't know why. I like my games to be unique, well thought out, original things from the beginning.
So when the Pet Shop Boys put out their board game, you're not going to buy it? God,
that would kill me. Yeah. I don't think they're going to. Although Duran Duran has a board game.
Wow.
From the 80s. That's how big they were.
Which was it called Thank You?
I think it was just called Duran Duran. Yeah, so I don't know. I can't really explain it. It's not a fear of this game is going to suck. It's more of it doesn't draw me in. I don't know why.
Okay.
What's your number? You're on number two now?
Two. Yeah. My number two. You mentioned box size earlier.
Yeah.
I too am concerned with box size, but only in terms of if it's too big a box, I won't buy it.
Right.
So I'm not going to buy any of the old Fantasy Flight coffin size boxes. I don't own a Marigo by Stefan Feld. It was too big. I quite like certain games that just come in big boxes, and I just don't have space for those giant boxes anymore. So if it's anything bigger than a large Ticket to Ride box or something like that, that may put me off.
But if it's big enough for you to put your feet on, like Takenoko, then it's okay.
Well, that was a mistake too. But once you played the giant size version, you can't go back to the mini one.
No, I would imagine. My number two, this might be a strange one, but age. I have found that if you go back and play a board game from the 90s, it's usually going to be much, much simpler. It's almost like video games. You can go back and enjoy a couple classic games for a few minutes, but if you actually want to enjoy a really good, detailed, in-depth game, you're probably going to want to buy something from the last 10, 15 years. That's been my experience anyway. So, you know.
So where's your line then? At what point is it too old?
Yeah, you know, I realize Catan came out in 95, you said, and that's an exception to the rule. But like, I guess, I don't even know. It's older games like from the 80s and 90s, I would generally probably...
Okay, so 2000s plus, basically, yeah. You're okay with anything older than that.
And I'm so even more interested if it's...
Your call to the new millennium, okay.
It's even more 2010 onwards,
I think. 2000, now you're getting closer to call to the new. In reality, it's 2018 on. In reality, it's got to be released in the last 2 months.
Yeah. I don't know, but don't you find that? So some of those older games are just too boring now? They're too simple?
Well, I think there's a big difference between designer games and mass market games.
Right.
The mass market games in the 80s and 90s, yes.
Right.
The designer games in the 80s and 90s, there just weren't very many, but there were some really good ones. Cosmic Encounter, Diplomacy, all these games that came out, both were actually early 70s, I think. But there were some excellent designer games that came out in the 80s and the 90s. But yeah, for the most part, I'm... looking at games that are published 2000 plus in that era. I don't have that same 2010s that you do. For me, 2000 is fine, but that's when they really started to come into their own.
I definitely have games from that era, but it seems most of my games are from the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's your fault. So, is it turn for my number one or is it your number one? Your number one.
My number one.
Yes.
Boy, we really shouldn't let you go first. It confuses the heck out of you.
Apparently.
My number one, mechanisms.
Yes.
Specifically, social deduction and co-op.
Yeah.
When I see either of those, or even semi-co-op, it might be even worse. But if I see those terms, I almost immediately just put the game back down.
Yeah, I'm with you
just
on that.
There are so few social deduction and co-op games that I enjoy that it's not worth taking the risk.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll play them with somebody, but I'm not going to buy them.
I feel like co-op games were the fidget spinners of board games. At first, everyone was like, oh, these are neat. And then within like a year, they're like, oh, these are terrible. Why do I want to do this to myself? You're right. I liked co-op games at first. But I don't like them now. And it's typically because of what you said before. You get the alpha player who takes over and it's just not much fun. And, you know, and I agree with you. Like, you're kind of in it for yourself and you want to see how well you can do on your own.
Or how badly in your case.
That's not nice. I'm usually second. Usually second. So I don't do too badly. I just don't usually win. Let's be honest here.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
All right. My number one is a lot of things together, but like components, depth, duration. If I turn a box over and all I see is 1,000 pieces and the game length is 2 hours and it's some in-depth massive war game, no, absolutely not. I definitely don't consider myself a heavy gamer. I'm a light to medium gamer at max. And so these giant, you know, $300 Star Wars games and battle games and stuff, no, not for me. I would, it's just too much.
Huh.
Yeah, I know you feel differently.
That should probably have been my number one for the things that make me excited about a game. When I turn the game over and I see thousands of bits and giant boards, and that's woohoo! So yeah, I can't really disagree anymore on that one. I disagree as fully as absolutely possible with your list.
You are you're an expert at those things, but I just find it just too overwhelming. If I'm like really like, you know, just nonstop thinking, it's not fun anymore for me. For me, I know that you're different.
Yep.
But yeah, that's
right. I remember the first time I saw the game, I think it's Colonist. 9 hours.
Oh God.
Hundreds and hundreds of bits. And I'm just looking at it going, ah, this is the greatest thing ever.
The only thing I can do happily for 9 hours is produce a song. But boy, after I'm like a zombie for a while. Do you come out of a game feeling a little bit like a zombie, or do you feel good at?
No, I feel like playing something else.
You are hardcore, my friend. All right. So that's our list. As always, we'd love to hear from you. First of all, again, let's just mention real quick, we have a survey going on. If you need to find it, Royce has posted it on our Facebook group. It's also in the description of our last episode, episode 37.
It'll be in the description of this one too.
Yep. And I think you said it's also on Twitter and...
It's on Twitter. It's in our Board Game Guild. You can find it everywhere.
Yeah. And where you can find it is where you can find us as well. So definitely look us up. Give us your feedback. What are the things that make you buy games or not buy games? Anything that we talked about today, we'd love to hear from you. And episode
four. I'm curious what you think of Aaron's evolution as a gamer. For those of you who've been listening since the beginning, how has he changed?
Yes. Have I gotten worse? And episode 40 is when we'll let you know who the big winner is of that $50 gift card. And
so if they want to email us, where do they email us, Aaron?
Definitely board@gmail.com.
Excellent. Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely board@gmail.com. Email, give us some feedback. Let us know what's going on.
Yeah. And if you're struggling with question 20 on the survey, literally just close your eyes, pick one, and don't hurt yourself.
They're all absolutely correct.
All right. So we are going to end today. Normally we end with a song that relates to the episode, but I thought it'd be really cool to end with a Rolling Stones song because even though Royce and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, we actually have a lot of music tastes that are similar. Mm-hmm. And the first time I ever encountered the Rolling Stones was with you and Mike at the IMAX.
Yeah, we dragged you out to see the
Rolling Stones IMAX.
What was the name of it?
Rolling Stones at the IMAX.
No, it had.
Did you also go to the concert?
I did.
The Voodoo Lounge tour.
Yep. No, that was the concert we went to together.
Yeah.
No, I. Start me up.
No, it's called Rolling Stones at the IMAX. You don't believe me. He's looking it up. You have to trust me on this. I have the DVD, so I know what it's called. Anyway, Royce and I share a similar interest in the Rolling Stones and their music. I think he knows them a little better than I do, but I do like them. And I was very sad to hear about Charlie Watts passing away, mostly because we've all been making jokes now for so long that they would be around forever. And it was kind of a wake-up call that they won't be. And it was a little sad. So we are going to end today's episode with a song called Tumbling Dice, which Royce says has a really good...
Can I tell my favorite Charlie Watts story before we go to the song?
Absolutely.
All right. So, height of the Stones' popularity. Keith Richards and Mick Jagger are partying in their hotel room, just drunk, whatever else is going on.
Yeah, probably more than drunk, yeah.
Keith Richards suddenly starts shouting, "Where's my drummer? Where's my drummer? Where's my drummer?" Somebody calls Charlie Watts. He's sleeping in his own room. He wakes up, has a shower, puts on his suit, because he always wears a suit. He goes up to the room. He knocks on the door. Keith Richards opens the door. He walks up to Mick Jagger, punches him in the nose and says, "I am not your drummer. You are my singer." Turns around and goes back to bed.
That is amazing. Oh my God.
All right. So yeah, Tumbling Dice, because dice, and it's actually considered one of Charlie's best drum songs for the Stones.
Perfect. Perfect song for a board game podcast. Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right. Royce, anything else you want to say?
Nope. That's it.
Say goodbye, Royce.
Goodbye, Royce.
Bye, everybody.